Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. Welcome to the Madman Machine Show 143 for Friday, January 23rd, 2009, the first podcast of the Obama administration. We've got a whole lot to cover. First of all, I want to say thank you for some of the listeners who made postings at drop.io/madmoneymachine. One person recommended some software for the Macintosh that might be as good or better than Adobe's Audition for Windows, and that is Logic Pro on the Mac. And that's what I'm coming to you on right now, is Macintosh Logic Pro software. So we will see how it turns out for us. Also like to caution on the last show, show 142. The first 200 or 300 people that downloaded the show into iTunes got the Harry Brown radio program instead of the Mad Money Machine. Oh, my stupid WordPress blog. Anytime I make a hyperlink to an MP3 file, it automatically puts that MP3 file in the feed for Mad Money Machine. So I have to be really cautious not to link to an MP3 file. Some fun stuff I want to get to before we get to all of the serious investing information that you need to know to get to your financial freedom. Some fun stuff. I got one listener emailed me, Stephen emailed me, talking first about backup solutions, and I'll get to that in a minute. But the second thing he mentioned is he has a trackable geocache called the Gingerbread Man, and thus the title of this show, the Gingerbread Man. And I would like to catch the Gingerbread Man. The Gingerbread Man, as I understand it, is currently in Texas. And if you are somewhere around the area of the Gingerbread Man, would you please, if you're traveling, try to get it closer to me? That's the new goal that Stephen has set on the Gingerbread Man geocache, is to get it to me. And I'm in the Washington, D.C. area. So if you can get it anywhere around D.C., I can probably go get it, and I'll take a picture of it and post it on the blog that I've got the Gingerbread Man. Get more information available, of course, in the show notes. Had some other people talk about backup solutions. JP recommended Mosey, and John recommended using Super Duper. Well, I think one of the things that I'm going to look out for is, I've always been waiting for Google's G Drive. You know, Google has all my information anyway. They've got my mail. They've got my calendar. They've got my to-do list. They've got some documents of mine. They have the Mad Money Machine survey, which, by the way, if you haven't taken the survey, go to madmoneymachine.com, and you'll see a link in there, second column on the right there. Take the MMM survey. Appreciate that. And so I might just wait till Google comes out with their online backup solution. I think people are calling it G Drive. They're speculating that Google might do crazy things like an unlimited amount of free storage for your backups. And I like the idea of an off-site backup solution. And Google is certainly a trusted provider for me in the year or more, a couple of years that I've been using Gmail. I just absolutely love it. The Google Calendar has been working fantastically for us. My wife and I both have calendars set up, and we can see each other's separate calendars that we add our own things to, and just, it's a fantastic solution. Well, I've gotten some emails from some others of you wanting to know, what's the deal with this Grand Central? Can I get a phone number at Grand Central, which is a Google property now? And I didn't realize, apparently, they don't have a place to sign up for a new account, and I don't see where I can email you an invitation. I've looked all through the website, and I can't find out how to send you an invitation to get a Grand Central account. But I did get a call from someone on the new Grand Central phone line, which is what number? 571-366-7121, I do believe. Oh, Let's listen.
Especially like the roller derby cut. I was wondering if you could review on your show at some point in time the website mints.com. I don't know, tell us listeners what you think of it, benefits, drawbacks, risks. Thank you. This is Kurt from Michigan. Bye.
Yeah, you know, I heard about Mint when it first came out, and I thought, wow, that sounds kind of neat. But then when I thought second about it, my second thought about it was, wow, that sounds kind of scary. A third-party website gets access to your online brokerage account. You actually have to type in your online brokerage account's password, as I understand it, into something like Mint for them to go gather all of your data, all of the funds and things that you own. And I don't know. You know, with all my data already owned by Google, I just don't think I want my actual financial data stored on the web somewhere. And that's the thing. That's the problem that I have with Mint. Otherwise, it looks pretty cool. And obviously, I didn't explain what Mint is. It says it's a website, the best free way to manage your money, free budgeting. It says best budgeting site from Kiplinger's Magazine, Editor's Choice Award from PC Magazine, Top Pick, 4 stars, Money Magazine, even available on the iPhone. And it says understand your money, all your accounts in one place, easy budgeting tools, find instant savings, 24/7 financial protection. I don't know. If any of you use Mint and you're not scared of it, get feedback to me somehow and I'll report it on the next show. All right, so about a month ago, I told you about this MicrosoftLive.com cashback program, and they had some sort of promotion going on. I think they still sort of do, but if you go to live.com and do a search for something you want to buy, and it comes up with a link over to eBay with a little gold logo there, you could click on that link, go to eBay, and they would give you up to 25% cash back on your purchase. And what I did is bought some 1 ounce gold coins, and the gold coins were something like $800, $900, and I would get $200 cash back, so Microsoft said. They said it would take 60 days, I think, to get my money. Well, the 60 days is up, and I did indeed get my money into PayPal. They automatically transferred it in right when they said they would. So that worked out. I don't know. Has anybody else tried this cashback program? Does it still work for you? You know, I tried it again. I have not reached the yearly limit. But when I went to do it again, for some reason, they shut me off. They didn't let me do it again. They said my account has reached the maximum number of credits or something. It's very strange and actually quite disappointing, too. Let's see, another correction from the last show. I was talking about how risk that is specific to one company is systemic or systematic risk. Well, it's actually the risk to the entire market is characterized as systemic or systematic risk. That's the entire market risk. The unsystematic or the non-systematic or unsystematic risk, I don't know. Does it matter what these terms are? The point is you don't want to take risks buying one specific stock because you're not rewarded with that risk. Okay, on we go. Now, another thing, going back to a previous show, last show, I talked about how Mish, Michael Shedlock, talked about how the S&P was most probably going lower because the price-earnings ratio is still too high. And when the earnings estimates on a lot of companies get cut, and the earnings, in fact, do fall, then P divided by E, the result of the P, the price of the stock, divided by E, the earnings, the lower earnings of the stock, results in a higher ratio of those two numbers. And he says over the average of time, the P-E ratio is usually about 15. Sometimes he expects it could dip down to 12 as it overshoots. Well, got an email from Rick, who says, in both your webpage and in the podcast, you refer to Mish, says the S&P is going lower. The basis of this forecast is that because earnings are going lower, then prices measured by the S&P should also go lower to go back to a historically average price-earnings ratio. And Rick says, this argument is essentially flawed and shows a total ignorance of how a company valuation process works within the context of macroeconomic factors such as interest rates. For sake of brevity, let me just postulate a basic valuation principle. The lower the discount rate used to value stocks, the higher the price of the stock. The discount rate to value a stock is dependent, among many other factors, of the risk-free rate. Because currently the risk-free rate is extremely low by historical standards, then the argument that the current PE are historically high is flawed. Just to avoid a complex financial mathematical calculation, let me just say that if a company earnings was represented by E, and that such earnings were sustained in perpetuity, then the price of the stock would be equal to such earnings divided by I, the discount ratio. P equals E divided by I. Because of the drop in I is so much steeper than the drop in E, then P currently should be higher than indicated by historical standards. Okay, well, and he goes on and on and on in this email, and says Mish has an amateurish prediction there. Well, the good news about this is it takes two sides to make a market, and that's why the market is where it is. For every buyer, there has to be a seller. So I guess for every stock Mish is selling, Rick is buying, or someone that has those beliefs at least. Another thing I keep hearing about is how lazy portfolios are somehow idiotic. The active account managers point to 2008 returns and say, see, buying and holding a lazy portfolio is dumb. And they never, ever take a look at the risk of what they're doing, though. They never, ever show you a long-term historical performance their strategy, and they never beat lazy portfolios in the long term. Yes, they can beat a lazy portfolio someday, some week, some month, some year even, but not over the long term, and especially not at the same risk level. A lot of these active managers are taking way too much risk with the investments that they're undertaking. So until you show me some long-term risk versus reward performance, then I'm going to stick with lazy portfolios. Thank you very much. The other flaw in the argument that they try to come up with is they're looking at the lazy portfolio smackdown, and many of these are all stock returns, which have experienced the negative 40% loss in 2008. Well, of course, you're not going to have your entire net worth invested in all equities unless you are somehow have a very great capacity for risk. And how do you find that out? You go to ifa.com and take the risk capacity survey. I know in the survey that I've taken on the website, the Madman Machine survey, I asked you, what risk capacity do you feel like you're in? A number of people had the highest risk capacity, but most people had some band of risk according to your age that went from, like, when you're 20s and 30s years old, it went from, say, a 70 portfolio down to when you're getting a little older, 50s and 60s, down to maybe even a 40 or 50 IFA portfolio, a blend of stocks and bonds, fixed income. So, you know, these active managers, they won't show you where their risk falls on a risk versus reward plot. Many times they don't talk about risk at all. So don't talk to me about lazy portfolios until you talk to me about risk. I did get an email from Craig over at crawlingroad.com, and he keeps track of this Harry Brown permanent portfolio. That's the website that he runs. He says it's the closest thing to an idea of Austrian investing that I mentioned previously. It's a very unorthodox strategy by conventional standards, but it sure has a long track record of working. There are some stretches where the performance was lackluster compared to a hotly tuned stock portfolio, but over time, the compound annual growth rate of the Harry Brown permanent portfolio is about 9 to 10% a year and provides about 4 to 5% real returns after inflation, even during the very bad inflation of the 1970s. In case you haven't seen it yet, he's put up a page of historical returns. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. I continue to be interested in that portfolio, and I want to take a look at how to buy gold. I know the gold coins I've mentioned is one way to do that. There's also this mutual fund, rather exchange-traded fund, called CEF is the ticker symbol for that. It's the Central Fund of Canada, and it is a Central Fund of Canada Limited, and it is a fund that buys gold, bullion. And I think it's a little bit different than the way the GLD works. And boy, I am coming unprepared. I'm going to have to research this for the next show and tell you why CEF is different than GLD. Anybody own it? But speaking of the commodity, precious metals, I saw an interview with Jim Rogers of the book Hot Commodities. He had an interview from someone in the Netherlands, I believe it was. And again, talking about how commodities are the first thing to go up after a bear market. He says in the 30s, commodities were the first thing to go up because they still have good fundamentals. They're not making, there's not this great surplus of commodities. It's just that everyone everywhere right now is selling assets to try to raise cash to pay out either the redemptions or to pay off their debts. They need to get cash, so they're selling everything. The first thing he thinks that will bounce back is the commodities. And I don't know. It sounds like a gamble to me. It's time now for the Learning Earning segment, where we learn how to earn our financial freedom. Isn't that what we're working for, all after all? Our financial freedom? Brought to you by my good friends. And I think at this point I can say friends at Index Funds Advisors. Mark Hebner and all the folks out there, very friendly to me. They've given me the freedom to talk about what I want to talk about on this show. And I want to talk about the IFA investment principles. There are seven of them on their IFA.com About Us page. We have done three so far. This week we'll get to number four. Their investment principles are, number one, that capitalism works on average and over time. Number two, that risk and return have a positive correlation. Take more risk, you should expect more returns, and vice versa. Number three, we did last week, which was free markets match prices to current levels of uncertainty, so that buyers can earn a risk-appropriate return. Okay, this week is number four. The greater the risk, the longer the time required to obtain the expected return. Investors should capture the average return of all stocks and the average return of a sufficient number of months. Okay, and I'll have a link in the show notes to a page at IFA that really demonstrates this. And it is a flash animation called The Distribution of Rolling Period Returns. And the one that comes up by default is the IFA Index Portfolio 100, which is the all-stock, highest-risk portfolio that they have. And I like to talk about it because, you know, it's apples-to-apples comparisons, equities-to-equities. That you can also click a button and get to a portfolio 50 and look at that. And what this chart looks at is the number of rolling periods from 1957 through December 2006 that have a certain annualized return. So on this chart, we have on the left the number of periods that meet the criteria, and on the bottom, the criteria is the annualized return. And what you'll see is over time, the annualized return that you might expect for Index Portfolio 100, is about 14 to 15%. Now it starts out, if you look at just a 1 year period, you can actually click on this chart on the 1 year button, and the histogram that pops up then is for rolling 1 year periods. For 1 year periods, there were 589 rolling 1 year periods since 1957 through December 2006. And again, this is taking 12 months at a snapshot. You can go January to January, that's one rolling period. You can go to February to February, that's another rolling period. Okay, so he charts every one of these 12-month periods and looks at what was the return, the annualized return of that 12 months. Okay. And if you did it for just 1 year, this histogram is very flat and wide, meaning that the annualized returns for any 1 year can be all kinds of, can be very low, for example, minus 35, minus 45%, we know, or very high. There's one out up at 65, 70, 70% gain for 1 year period. There were one or two of these periods that experienced that large of a return over a 1 year period. But if you looked at 2 year periods, what is the average annualized return of a rolling 2 year period? Suddenly the histogram starts to shrink more narrow and yet a little taller. And what this means then is that for a 2 year period, the annualized return is not as low, or it's also not as high. You don't have one that goes out to 70 for the 2 year period, the annualized return, and you don't have one down at minus 35, minus 40. Let's click on 3 years. It gets narrower. It gets taller again. You have more number of rolling periods that start to cluster around this expected return. If you go all the way over then to 12 years, if we're looking at 12-year periods, what is the average annualized return for each of these rolling 12-year periods? Now, how many rolling 12-year periods are there? There are 457. Rolling 12-year periods from 1957 through December 2006. Are you with me? This chart is amazing. You've got to see this. Absolutely have to go to the show notes, madmanmachine.com. Click on the learning earning segment. The second link in there gets you to this IFA investment principle number 4, the distribution of rolling periods. Look at then the 12-year annualized returns or of IFA Index Portfolio 100. At no time was there a negative annualized return over a 12-year period. The average annualized return over these rolling 12-year periods was 14.42%. And that is the average of the annualized returns. It's a wonderful chart. If you can take some time to really study it and comprehend what is going on here, look at every number, look at everything on the chart, click the different buttons, let it sink in. IFA investment principle number 4, the greater the risk, the longer the time required to obtain the expected return. And so what you need to do to validate that is look at the difference between portfolio 100 and the difference between portfolio 50 then. Just click 100, then click 50, and you'll see that for in order to obtain the expected return for 50, it doesn't take the 12 years like it would for portfolio 100. I hope you can absorb the impact of that investment principle. This is the Learning Earning segment brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. Check them out on the web at ifa.com. Let's pull another something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. And this week, it's a very simple table. It's the CALAN periodic table of investment returns, including REITs. And what this chart is, a table is the annual returns for key indices from all the way back to 1989 through the previous month, 2008, ranked in order of performance. And it looks kind of like a periodic table of the elements, only this is the periodic table of investment returns. Going across this matrix then, you have the years, 89, 90, there's a column for 91, a column for 92, and on the very far right is a column for 2008. Each row of the table then lists in order of performance what the top asset class was in that year. For example, in, let's pick 2006, let's go back to the fun times, the REITs were the top performer in 2006. They were up for that year 35%. Next under that was the Europe and Asia Far East Fund, up 26%. All the way down at the bottom of that year then, 2006, the worst performer was the Barclays Capital Aggregate Bond Fund, and it was up 4.33%. Well, you go to the next year then, And these asset classes are color-coded, so you can easily see the patterns in there. Which funds do the best each year, which funds do the worst each year in order of performance. And you can detect, like I say, the patterns. The REITs are this sort of dark blue color. The bond fund is kind of a light green color. And the important point of the chart is that there is no pattern. That's really the important point of the entire chart is you can't predict which asset class is going to do better in a year than which other asset class. 2008, which was the best performing asset class? It was the one that was the worst in 2006, the aggregate bond fund. And where did REITs fall? Were REITs the worst performer then in 2008? No, they were somehow in the middle. The worst performer was the Europe-Asia Far East Fund, and then next worst was the S&P 500 value stocks. So just like trying to pick stocks, pick the time to be in and out of the market, picking the sector or the asset class to be in is also extremely difficult. That's the tool in the crib for Mad Money Machine Show 143, the Callan Periodic Table of Investment Returns. And like other tools I've given you so far, this one is free. There are indeed a number of ways to get back to me, your input, your feedback. Email feedback@madmoneymachine.com. You can call the voicemail line. The new number is 571-366-7121. Call that and leave me a voicemail. One way to get feedback that everybody can see is to go to drop.io/madmoneymachine. You can also send me something through Twitter, although I don't always have the Twitter client up. Although I did on the inauguration day, I was following this Twitter grid thing, whatever it was. I made a blog posting about it. And anytime someone posted a Twitter tweet with #INAUG09, inauguration 09 was the symbol, if they put that in their tweet, it would automatically show up then in this automatically refreshed list. And it was amazing. You couldn't possibly keep up with what everybody was commenting on as they were following the inauguration. Some people were at home watching it on TV. Others were actually down in D.C. and I think trying to make tweets from the mall area down there. Although a lot of people said the AT&T service was not so good with all the people down there. You can follow me at delicious.com/madmoneymachine. And the last place I'll say that if you actually do have a really serious question about how to manage your finances, your portfolio, how to manage your investments, another good place to go still is bogleheads.org. Boglehead referring to John Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, the mutual fund company, the first guy to create an index fund, apparently. There are some devotees to his approach that have set up a website that is a forum for discussion. And it's a place that I check out regularly. And it's a great place to get your investment questions answered. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes finding the gingerbread man to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next Friday. In the meantime, visit IFA.com, Index Funds Advisors. Definitely look at those charts I was talking about. Take the risk capacity survey and benchmark your portfolio to see how much better you would have done in index funds.